This is Wealth Wake Up with Dick Donahue and Camille Koppenberg. KGMI and the Cascade Radio Group receive financial compensation to present this program in its entirety.
The opinions voiced on Wealth Wake Up with Dick Donahue and Camille Koppenberg are for general information only and not intended to provide specific advice or recommendations for any individual. To determine what is appropriate for you, consult a qualified professional. Investment advisory services offered through CWM LLC, a registered investment advisor. Carson Partners is a division of CWM LLC, a nationwide partnership of advisors. Guests on Wealth Wake Up with Dick Donahue and Camille Koppenberg are not affiliated with CWM LLC.
Welcome to Wealth Wake Up Live this Saturday morning here on KGMI, except we're not live today. We did have to pre-record today's show. Let's talk about our weekly recap to open the show. Both value and growth stocks rallied in response to strong earnings reports from the major banks. The NASDAQ was up 2.818%, outpaced the other indices. The S&P 500 index gained 1.82%, followed by the Dow Jones Industrial Average up 1.58%. The Russell 2000 index was up 1.46%. Earnings and economic data were the primary drivers as Democrats continued behind-the-scenes deliberations over the social infrastructure bill while the infrastructure bill remained stalled in the House. The content of a negotiated solution, or resolution if one were to emerge, is unknown. In the meantime, certain senators, including Arizona Democrat Sinema, are voicing specific spending limitations and insisting on prioritizing the smaller infrastructure bill. September retail sales unexpectedly rose 0.7% in September, but analysts have projected a 0.1% decline. Initial jobless claims for the week fell to a pandemic low of 293,000, a notable decline from the prior week's 329,000, and continuing claims also reached a pandemic low of 2.59 million. Even so, the University of Michigan's October Consumer Sentiment Index fell from 72.8 in September to 71.4. This downturn in sentiment is likely a reflection of continuing inflationary trends. September's Consumer Price Index rose 5.4% year over year, the highest rate in 30 years. And the major contributors included food, gas, and rent. For the first time since October of 2014, oil prices, which is West Texas crude, rose above $80 a barrel as demand continues to outstrip supplies. OPEC recently approved an increase in production. Still, the increase may be insufficient as an underinvestment in new oil sources hampers production. J.P. Morgan, Bank of America, and Citibank reported strong earnings this week despite less than robust lending activity. They continue to reduce reserves set aside during the pandemic. And consumers and businesses which accumulated significant cash reserves during the pandemic are once again willing to take on debt. J.P. Morgan CEO Jamie Dimon commented that the economy is healthy and should stay that way. He stated his belief that supply chain bottlenecks are temporary setbacks, and hopefully a year from now, there will be no supply chain problem. Also, Delta Airlines reported better-than-expected earnings as air traffic increased, and the company is forecasting further growth as international travel restrictions ease. A significant rise in jet fuel prices may impact earnings in the short term until fare increases cover additional costs. And earnings releases and accompanying outlooks for supply and demand will likely determine market momentum over the near term. Consumers and businesses remain concerned about inflation, even though interest rate increases remain modest. This week, the International Monetary Fund cited supply chain disruptions in reducing its 2021 growth forecast for advanced economies from 5.6% to 5.2%. And the positive outlook should provide a base for equity market appreciation over time. Higher volatility, though, may reflect emerging inflationary and other economic forces. Let's talk about the COVID tracker that we follow every week. And we saw a recent poll of food service workers, including servers, bartenders, and hostesses, that found that 80% said that they have either witnessed or experienced hostile behavior over virus safety measures. According to the May survey of more than 2,000 workers by One Fair Wage and the University of California, Berkeley Food Labor Research Center. And we also found that between mid-March and mid-October of last year, the number of mental health-related ER visits per 100,000 visits rose from the year earlier period by 24% for 5 to 11-year-olds and by 31% for 12 to 17-year-olds, according to data from the CDC. Also saw an interesting chart here I thought that I would share with you. In the United Kingdom, the COVID-19 death rate per 100,000 by vaccine status, and basically below the age of 50, is pretty much negligible. But over the age of 50, the fully vaccinated, there were about 3 per 100,000, and there were 10 per 100,000 that were not vaccinated that died. At age 50 to 60, there were about 5 per 100,000 that had been vaccinated, and 20 that had not been vaccinated. Ages 70 to 79, on the average per 100,000, there were about 10 that were vaccinated that passed away, and there were like 50 that were not vaccinated that passed away. And then over age 80, there were around 40 per 100,000 that died that were vaccinated, and 130 per 100,000 that were not vaccinated. Also, we found some statistics that are similar in the Seattle area, although put together on a different format. In this case, this is from January 27th of this year through September 29th. And this is per 100,000 per day. Basically, not very many deaths, again, below the age of 30. Between 30 and 49, few deaths, both vaccinated and not vaccinated. Then at age 50 to 64, there were about 0.04% per 100,000, and there was 0.25% that were not vaccinated between that age. And then between 65 and plus, there was about 0.1 per 100,000 that died if they were vaccinated, and there was about 1.7 per 100,000 that were not vaccinated. So pretty significant numbers there. And then looking at the number of doses that had been administered, as of October 13th, there had been 404,371,247 doses that had been administered nationwide. And let's look at some of our other recovery tracker information we follow. Initial jobless claims as of October 8th, as I mentioned a minute ago, were 293,000 for the week. That was down 10.9% from a week ago. And continuing jobless claims as of October 1st were 2,593,000, and that was down 4.9% as of October 1st. Box office receipts from October 1st to October 7th were up 216.6%, so a lot more people were going to theaters. Railcar traffic as of October 8th was down 1.8%. Steel production as of October 11th was down 0.7%. Hotel occupancy was between October 3rd and October 9th was up 3.6%. Restaurant industry as of October 13th saw a drop of about 3.2%. TSA checkpoints as of October 13th, an average of 1,912,228 passengers a day passed through TSA checkpoints. That was an increase of 8.2% for the week. Supply of motor gas as of October 8th was down about 2.6%, and global commercial flights as of October 13th averaged 94,486 a day, and that was a drop of about 0.3%. Let's go ahead and take a quick break. We'll be back here in a moment. Thank you for being with us today. Welcome back to Wealth Wake Up. Dick Donahue with you this Saturday morning. And we have pre-recorded, so we are not live today. But we are Asset Advisors. We are located out in Ferndale. just north of the Slater Road, actually, in the Pacific Commerce Center next to Wilson's Furniture. Our address is 5060 Pacific Highway, Suite 101, Ferndale, 98248. Our phone number, 360-733-1200. And check out our website at wealthwakeup.com. Okay, talked about the markets this week. We're seeing a lot of reports right now that are saying that the market looks like it's poised for a major run. That Wall Street is to start posting third quarter earnings, which they've started, and market participants are expecting another big round of postings. Driving most of these earnings is robust growth in the overall economy, which drove the same blockbuster second quarter reports. Some of those highest expectations are the banking sectors. We heard from J.P. Morgan Chase, Bank of America, and also PNC Financials, U.S. Bank, look basically going to lead the pack. This is driven by micro factors in their companies, but also macro factors that benefits financials as interest rates look to rise and the Fed begins tapering. Outside financials, large caps like United Healthcare Group are also looking to post very high earnings with solid financials, and its valuable brand, Optum, is driving earnings. The Delta variant may have hamstrung many companies in the second quarter, but large companies could be robust enough to withstand the COVID resurgence. Basically, we look for energy companies also to post solid third quarter numbers as high prices help bottom lines for these large cap juggernauts. So just a little thought there. And while we're talking about oil and gas companies, we're also seeing that the price of natural gas has surged. As of the close on October 8th, the price of natural gas was $5.57 per million British thermal units, or BTUs. That's up 111.79% to 2.63 per million of BTUs at the close on October 8th of last year. The price of natural gas at the close of October 8th this year is up 276.35% from its 2020 low of 1.48 million BTUs at the close on June 25th of last year. The number of active natural gas rigs is contributing greatly to this, as they have plunged from 143 on October 11th of 19 down to 99 on October 8th of this year. That's almost a 50% decrease in the number of gas rigs that are out there looking for natural gas. That's a decline, though, of about 30.77% total on the whole percentage. Natural gas producers have done so in an effort to curb production. The price of natural gas is also up because demand for U.S. liquefied natural gas, or LNG, is rising. The U.S. Energy Information Administration reported that U.S. exports of LNG are expected to reach a record high this year and set another record high next year. The EIA, Energy Information Administration, sees exports averaging 9.7 billion cubic feet per day in 2021, topping last year's record of 6.5 billion. So that's 9.7 from 6.5 billion in 1 year. The winter season is closing in, and that could impact the price of natural gas as well. The Energy Information Administration estimates that U.S. households will spend 30% more for natural gas to heat their homes this winter, and this percentage could go higher if the weather is colder than expected. And let's talk about a little bit about technology stocks and their strong earnings since the end of the financial crisis, which induced bear market. And from March 9th of 2009, when the market turned around, until October 8th of this year, all four of the technology-related indices significantly outperformed the S&P 500. The average annualized returns for the period were as follows. The ISE Cloud Computing Index was up 28.81% a year. The Philadelphia Semiconductor Index was up 27.4%. The Dow Jones Internet Composite was up 26.84%. And the S&P 500 Information Technology Index was up 24.5%. The S&P Index in that period of time was up 18.39%, according to Bloomberg. And while we acknowledge that the U.S. market, as measured by the S&P index, did endure another bear market, or COVID-19 induced, from February 19th of last year through March 23rd, it came and went so quickly that it proved little more than a hiccup in the equities markets. A bear market is defined as a 20% or greater decline in the price of a security or index. From February 19th of last year to October 8th of this year, which includes the bear market, the S&P index posted a cumulative return of 31.19%. According to Bloomberg, the top performing sector was information technology, with a total return of a little over 50%. And as of October 11th of this year, information technology accounted for 27.62% of the S&P index. That means that companies that fit into that information technology sector make up almost 20%, 8% of the total S&P 500 index, which is the largest weighting of any of the major sectors by far, with healthcare came in a distant second with a weighting of just short of 13%. The price-earnings ratios have gotten stretched for some of the indices. This means investors will be paying more in price for a dollar worth of earnings. That is certainly the case for cloud computing. As often is the case within the technology sector, an elevated PE ratio could be in response to its growth prospects. An International Data Corporation, or IDC, estimates that the total worldwide spending on cloud services, including hardware, software, and professionally managed services, will rise from $706.6 billion in this year to $1.3 trillion by 2025, according to its own release. IDC is targeting a compound annual growth rate of about 16.9% in the increased spending for cloud services. Well, let's change topics and go a different direction here. What will the Build Back Better plan do to Medicaid? It's probably going to have less flexibility and less accountability. There's a lot of transformation in healthcare policy that's embedded in the $3.5 trillion social spending bill, including continuation of the Biden administration's campaign to strip away state flexibility and consolidate federal control over Medicaid. Medicaid, which is a joint federal-state program to provide health care services to certain low-income Americans, has seen an explosion in enrollment and spending. The Centers for Medicare and Medicaid Services announced over the summer that a record 80 million Americans are enrolled in Medicaid. The federal spending on it has increased an estimated 19%. At the same time, the Biden administration has taken unprecedented steps to curb states' ability to manage and stabilize Medicaid. The Build Back Better plan, making its way through Congress under a budget reconciliation process, would allow Democrats to pass it without any Republican votes, would accelerate these troubling trends and further expand the welfare state. Most notably, $3.5 trillion spending bill is creation of a Medicaid-like program. Under the proposal, the federal government set up and run a new program to provide medical services to individuals in states that elected not to expand their own Medicare programs. This proposal not only would increase the number of Americans on government-run health care, but also expand the government's role in delivering that care. Moreover, while the program seems narrowly focused, it is certainly reasonable to assume that it could be expanded and pave the way for full-blown government takeover. So rather than expand the broken welfare state, the President and Congress should focus on addressing the root causes of this country's health care woes, such as costly regulations that drive up health care premiums and drive down affordable coverage options. The Build Back Better plan also would expand Medicaid's role in delivering long-term care services. If passed, the bill would create a grant program for states to expand access to home and community-based services through Medicaid. It would boost the federal share of costs for states that adopt its expansion, and the federal government also would assume a greater share of related administrative costs. The COVID-19 relief bills passed by Congress also already provided significant federal resources to the states. And the spending bill would mean a significant permanent increase in taxpayer spending on Medicaid program, exacerbate a growing shift towards the federal government's assuming a greater share of the cost of Medicaid. Dick Donahue with you with Wealth Wake Up Live here on KGMI. We'll be back shortly. Thank you for being with us today.
And I'm proud to be an American, where at least I know I'm free.
Welcome back to Wealth Wake Up Live. Dick Donahue with you this Saturday morning. And again, we are pre-recorded. Let's talk about, you know, as of Friday, October 15th, we have an open enrollment period of time for Medicare enrollees and a lot of discussion. And we're finding that the biggest gap in Medicare is in the dental, hearing, and vision coverage. And one of the biggest differences between retirees and pre-retirees is their knowledge about what Medicare covers. More importantly, what it doesn't. Nearly minted retirees are shocked to learn that traditional Medicare doesn't cover dental, hearing, or vision services, despite the fact that their need for these type of care increases with age. Some beneficiaries in traditional Medicare may have private coverage for these services, but many do not. An all-inclusive Medicare Advantage plan typically does include some coverage for dental and hearing and vision services, but the extent of that coverage and the value of these services benefits varies. As a result, Medicare beneficiaries who need dental, vision, or hearing care may face out-of-pocket costs that can run into the hundreds and even thousands of dollars for extensive dental treatment, hearing aids, and corrective eyewear. Many forgo getting care or treatment that they need due to the cost. Well, there's a newly released report from the Kaiser Family Foundation that explores the extent and impact of these coverage gaps just as Congress debates whether and how to expand Medicare B coverage to include dental, hearing, or vision services. Higher income beneficiaries, defined as individuals with incomes over $88,000, married couples with joint incomes over $176,000, pay higher monthly premiums for both Medicare Part B, which covers doctor's fees and outpatient services, and Medicare Part D prescription drug plans than average income retirees. High income surcharges, known as income-related monthly adjustments, or IRMA, will be announced in November for coverage beginning January 1st. The Kaiser report found that only 8% of beneficiaries used hearing services, but close to half reported having difficulty hearing. Similarly, 35% report using vision services, and more than one-third reported difficulty seeing. Dental services were the most widely used, with 53% of beneficiaries reporting using dental services in the last year. But high out-of-pocket costs can prevent beneficiaries from obtaining needed care. In 2019, 9.5 million beneficiaries, including 16% of traditional Medicare beneficiaries and 17% of Medicare Advantage enrollees, reported that there was a time in the last year that they could not get dental, hearing, or vision care. Among users of these services, beneficiaries enrolled in Medicare Advantage plans spent less out-of-pocket for dental and vision care than beneficiaries in traditional Medicare in 2018, but there was no difference between the two groups in spending on hearing care. Both groups spent substantially more for dental and hearing than for vision. For dental services, average out-of-pocket spending was $776 among beneficiaries in Med Advantage plans and $992 among beneficiaries in traditional Medicare. That's a difference of about $224 a year that people in traditional Medicare spent more. For vision services, average out-of-pocket was $194 among beneficiaries in Med Advantage, $242 among beneficiaries in traditional Medicare, or a $48 difference. Most Medicare Advantage enrollees had coverage for some dental, some vision, and hearing benefits, but still incurred out-of-pocket costs for these services. Lower average out-of-pocket spending among Medicare Advantage enrollees for dental and vision care is likely due to several factors, according to the Kaiser report. Most Medicare Advantage enrollees have coverage for dental, hearing, and vision through their plan, or partial coverage at least, and I'm going to talk about that again here in a minute, which helps to improve the affordability of these services. Lower out-of-pocket spending among Medicare Advantage enrollees may also be related to lower overall income levels among these beneficiaries. Previous Kaiser analysis showed that average out-of-pocket spending on dental care rises with income because higher income beneficiaries are better able to afford such expenses, not because they have greater dental needs. It is possible that some traditional Medicare beneficiaries use more or more expensive types of dental and vision care than those in Medicare Advantage, contributing to their higher average out-of-pocket costs for these services. Lawmakers are considering adding dental, hearing, and vision benefits to Medicare as part of their budget reconciliation bill, a change that would be the largest expansion of Medicare since Part D drug benefit was launched in 2006. These program improvements or changes could lead to higher federal spending of $358 billion over 10 years, according to the Congressional Budget Office, and are likely to eventually lead to even higher premiums for upper-income retirees. So let's spend a minute, because this is that change period as of October 15th that runs to December 7th. Now, Med Advantage plans do offer some of these other benefits, such as your vision, such as your hearing, such as some dental. What they don't cover is that you have a lot higher co-pays and you have deductibles, especially if you're hospitalized. So you kind of have to look at your condition or your state of health and decide whether you want to have your base Medicare plan and then a full Medicare supplement. Now, personally, I would recommend, or I do recommend, the Medicare supplement, what we call Plan G. And the reason for that is I've seen a lot of people go to the hospital with very high deductibles, run into some types of different, say, cancer as an example, which requires very expensive treatment programs, et cetera. And all of a sudden, they've got huge copays. Whereas basically the Plan G programs, you pay about $200, $210 a month for them. So that is higher than you're going to pay for your Medicare Advantage plan. You have to weigh out, though, as I mentioned a minute ago, the difference in expense that you have, for example, what your exposure is. Because the average person, according to the Kaiser study, had about $224 a year more expense for their dental with a Plan G type plan, and they had about $48 a year more out of pocket for vision. So not a lot more, and so you have to kind of look at what your exposure is and say, well, what's best for me? I know my choice. I've had Plan G for a number of years. Little secret, the Med Advantage plans pay better commissions. That's one reason some agents don't talk about them a lot. And I may have a couple agents that aren't real happy for me talking about that, but I did mention that today. Okay, let's talk about student loan debt. There's more than 40 million federal student loan borrowers that could be required to start making payments again as of February 1st of next year. That's after a freeze of nearly 2 years that also dropped interest rates to 0%. For many, the pause in required monthly payments has provided breathing room, giving them time to pay down other debt, save for their homes, or build their emergency savings. But for many others, especially those who faced unemployment during the pandemic, the payment freeze has been a financial lifeline. But that hasn't been lost on the employers, who are now more than ever are juicing up some of the benefit plans in order to fill the vacant roles in a labor market that is favoring workers more than in the past. So you'll see some employers now starting to put allowances in their employment packages for paying back student loan debt. But let's talk about what's going to happen here. When the payment freeze began in February of 2020, it was set to expire in 6 months. But it's been extended multiple times, and in August, the Biden administration renewed the moratorium that looks like to be for the last time. Some Democratic members of Congress voiced support for the latest extension, but argued that it did not go far enough, instead pushing for loan cancellations up to $50,000. Meanwhile, several Republicans in Congress criticized the latest extension, noting that it would cost the government an estimated $20 billion, in addition to the $76 billion that had resulted from the prior rounds of loan pauses. Now, those who opted to make payments have chipped away more quickly at balances because during this period of time, there has been a zero interest rate, and borrowers who are in a public service loan forgiveness programs have also benefited. So recent grads, let's talk about here, brace for the inevitable, who have student loan debt have never had to make a payment. As of February 1st, going to receive a jolt. Some borrowers may be shocked to see how much their monthly payments are, especially for new graduates who might find out that their loan balance of monthly payments for the first time. The default repayment plan is a standard 10-year plan. If that repayment option does not work for your budget, you should consider enrolling in one of the income-driven repayment plans that you qualify for. These repayment plans require payments of 10 to 15% of your discretionary income, or in the case of parents, 20% of their discretionary income. So it's very important to explore the federal student loan repayment options before the payments resume and understand the short and long-term implications on your financial situation. For employers that are fighting to recruit talent, that need is obvious. Many have gone beyond tuition assistance, adding perks such as student loan contributions to 401k matching contributions that are also paying down some of those loans. And as I mentioned earlier, Congress is considering legislation that would specifically allow employers to contribute to 401k accounts for workers who don't direct any of their earnings to the plan but are paying down student loans. So we'll continue to follow what's happening in the student loan repayment process, but it is something that you need to be aware of and pay attention to. And know that as of February 1st of next year, those of you that have got student loans may be seeing a little bite out of your income that you haven't had for the last couple of years. Dick Donahue with you with Wealth Wake Up here on KGMI. We'll be back in a moment.
'Cause there ain't no doubt I love this land. God bless the USA.
Welcome back to Wealth Wake Up Live. Dick Donahue with you. If you got questions for us, give us a call, 360-733-1200. Well, we saw an interesting report come out this week, and basically on the first day that Washington workers could apply to opt out of the coming payroll tax, which is nothing more than an income tax, if they have private long-term care insurance, making the term opt-out somewhat misleading, the site set up an exemption applications crashed within the first hour. This gave many people little hope that the Employment Security Department can handle this part of the legislation's flawed law mandating long-term care some people don't want, others don't need, and many won't qualify for. But after the first few days of technological woe for people seeking exemption from a bad deal, the department seems to have things under control. That's according to both the ESD spokesman and people still applying for the exemption. Several people who applied actually have already received approval letters from the state. They can show it to their employers so that they are not stuck paying 58 cents per $100 tax on their wages starting in January. There was a recent meeting of the Long-Term Care Services and Support Trust Commission that actuarially studies estimated that there would be about 105,000 opt-outs. Well, they're already over 110,000, so this is yet another reason that lawmakers would be wise to repeal the law. So I'm anxious to see what the end number will do to the fund that is already in financial trouble. Hopefully it won't make the long-term care tax rise or the insufficient lifetime benefit attached to the tax bill even sooner than anticipated. So it will be very, very interesting to see how this all falls out. Now, some good news. Social Security has announced a 5.9% cost of living increase for Social Security recipients for 2022. They announced on Wednesday that retirement benefits will increase by 5.9%, which is the largest cost of living adjustment in 40 years. Social Security benefits rise automatically when the Consumer Price Index for urban workers increases in the third quarter, which is July, August, September of the current year, which would have been this year, over the corresponding third quarter of the previous year. Over the last 12 years, Social Security COLAs have averaged a meager 1.4%, including 1.3% boost in 2021. The 5.9% COLA that will apply to benefits starting in January is the largest increase since a 7.4% increase back in 1982. The 5.9% COLA will boost the average monthly Social Security retirement benefit to $657 a month next year, up $92 from this year's $1,565 average benefit. The 5.9% also increases the maximum retirement benefit, currently $3,148 a month, to $3,345 for someone who retires at full retirement age in 2022. Anyone who's 62 or older and eligible to receive Social Security in 2022 will profit from the 5.9% COLA, even if they haven't yet filed for benefits. So there's no need to rush to file Social Security before January. The 2022 cost of living adjustment, along with every other COLA awarded from the time individuals turn 62 until they file for benefits, is included in their future Social Security benefits. The COLA calculation formula also means future Social Security increases could be meager or non-existent for a few years because inflation would have to continue to relatively robust levels to exceed the current high bar. For example, the last time there was a significant COLA of 5.8% in 2009, based on inflation in the third quarter of 2008, Social Security benefits remained flat for the following 2 years. So the 5.9% COLA for 22 also affects how much beneficiaries can earn from a job without jeopardizing any of their benefits if they claim Social Security before their full retirement age. In 2022, individuals who are under full retirement age for the full year will be able to earn up to $19,560 a year without forfeiting any benefits. That's up from $18,960 a year this year, so that's about $800 more a year. If their earnings from job exceed the cap, they could lose about a dollar in benefits for every $2 that they earn over that $19,560 limit. And the earnings cap does not apply to pensions, investments, or other forms of unearned income. In the year someone reaches full retirement, there's a more generous earnings cap. In 2022, you'll be eligible to earn up to $51,960 a month in the months, that's per year, up to the months leading up to your full retirement age, up from $50,520 this year. The full retirement age increases in 66 and 4 months in 2022 for people that were born in 1956. And if their earnings exceed that limit, they forfeit a dollar in benefits for every $3 earned over that $51,960. So for every $3 you earn in the year you file, this next year, for example, that you earn over $51,960 before you're eligible, you will lose a dollar in benefits. And any benefits lost to the earnings cap are restored in the form of higher monthly benefits at full retirement age. So Mendigo, I mentioned at age 56, full retirement age is 66 and 4. So if you take it earlier, you're going to have, if you earn too much money, you're going to have that discount. Just keep that in mind. Costs are expected to continue to climb in 2022, and we expect that they'll lead to continued erosion of buying of Social Security benefits. And while the higher income in 2022 is welcome, it could also mean higher taxes and even higher Medicare Part B premium costs for those who pay income-related premium surcharges. Employers and employees each pay 7.65% of their wages to support Social Security and Medicare. Self-employed individuals both pay the employer and the employee share for a combined rate of 15.3%. In 2021, the 6.2% portion of the payroll tax that funds Social Security applies to the first $142,800 in earnings. So that first $142,800, you'll pay 6.2% to Social Security. A 5.9% COLA increase for the maximum taxable wages of $147,000 in 2022. That means workers who earn $147,000 next year will pay an extra $260 in FICA taxes. And the Medicare portion of the tax is 1.45% on all earnings, even those above the maximum Social Security tax limit. Plus, individuals with earned income of more than $200,000, $250,000 for married couples filing jointly pay an additional 0.9% in Medicare taxes. And most retirees should see an increase in their net Social Security benefits in 22, even after factoring in the Medicare Part B premiums, which are usually deducted directly from their Social Security benefit. In 2021, most Medicare beneficiaries paid $148.50 a month for the Medicare Part B. Higher income beneficiaries pay more. Medicare surcharges for 22, officially known as income-related monthly supplements, will be announced here in the next month. Let's talk about some things that you can do, some financial strategies in this never-ending war that retirees have against inflation. We know that many of them are facing a struggle, but here are some ideas that you can do. One, pay attention to this Medicare open enrollment period that I just talked about that runs from October 15th to December 7th. This is when anyone on Medicare can make changes in their plan, so make sure you have the right prescription drug coverage through your Medicare Part D formulary. If not, make the right switch. Enrolling in Medicare Advantage plan can provide out-of-pocket spending caps as well as benefits traditional Medicare does not cover. Again, I talked about it earlier because I'm not totally an advocate of the Medicare Advantage plans. I think the Plan G is a far superior plan. Anyway, delay claiming Social Security benefits. Social Security eligibility starts at age 62. The longer you wait to enroll to age 70, the more your monthly payments will be. The financial impact of what age a person starts taking their benefit is significant. For example, in 21, a person who retires having paid the maximum contribution to Social Security is going to receive $2,324 monthly if they start at age 62. But if they waited to age 70, they're going to receive almost $3,895 a month. Now, adjust your spending habits. It makes sense that you want to finally enjoy your money after a lifetime of savings, but it's important to be smart about it. People need to be even more careful with their money in retirement than they were in their working years. Here's just one example of doing so how it might pay out. Suppose you routinely buy a new car as soon as the loan on the old one is paid off. Now, that would be a good time to change that habit. Let's say the monthly payment on the new car is $400. If you postpone the purchase for 2 years, you're going to save about $9,600. Also, considering refinancing your mortgage with interest rates still low, this could be a good time to consider refinancing your home loan. Careful study is required before making a move. Get at least 3 quotes, compare rates, terms, and potential penalties to ensure that you're getting the best deal. You also may want to get a home energy audit. Energy costs go up just like everything else, but there are ways to reduce your home's energy use, which is one way to keep your monthly bill in check. Many providers offer in-home energy audits where the representatives come to your home, complete a thorough inspection, and provides a report detailing the ways that you can save. Also, start paying down your credit card debt would be one other thing to take a very hard look at, and take advantage of senior discounts and membership organizations, and there are a number of those out there. So retirees to start getting ahead in their never-ending march to inflation, Social Security COLA increase based on economic reality can be a sea change from what they've experienced with the past decade, but you need to plan beyond that. We can help you in any way. Give us a call. Dick Donahue with you this Saturday morning. We'll wake up live, actually pre-recorded. Give us a call if you got questions, 360-733-1200. And don't forget our show tomorrow morning at 9 o'clock. Thank you and have a great weekend.